Hello, and welcome to the Fraternity Sorority Life podcast. I'm your host, Matt Deeg, and in this bonus episode, some fraternity executive directors and CEOs share their thoughts about the process and promise of the NIC 2.0. I reached out to some friends and colleagues in the field and asked them a few questions. These folks included Justin Kirk, executive director of Delta Upsilon Fraternity, and Gordy Heminger, CEO of Alpha Sigma Phi Fraternity. Their comments and conversations after the break. So first, I made a quick phone call to Justin Kirk, Executive Director of Delta Upsilon Fraternity.
Hi, Matt.
Hey, Justin, how are you?
Good, yourself?
Not too bad, just, you know, in the final stages of leaving.
Yeah, when are you going to go public?
I think I'm going to put it up on my last day here. A side note here. My phone call with Justin happened as I was beginning a transition from Hanover College to Penn State University. So we chatted a little bit about my new role and what that process was going to look like before diving into our conversation about NIC 2.0. All right, here you go. You know, that's a really good place to start, kind of, from your perspective. You know, where did this come from? What was the process, collaboration, right? Like, you know, when I think about getting 70 plus fraternity execs in a room or around a, you know, conference table to decide on something, I think of mass chaos. But, you know, what was it like?
Well, the past year for any of us who have worked with fraternities for some period of time, I think many of us would all agree that it was probably the most challenging year for us.
Right.
And when it's a challenging time, what are we doing? What can we do better? But clearly something needs to change. And I think there's probably very few times in the last 20, 30, 40 years where everybody just stopped and said, something needs to change. You know, there's a lot of high-profile incidents that put fraternity in the media spotlight. The intense scrutiny had a lot of folks questioning the value of our organizations. And for many executives, it was a reflection point. And I would say last April, there were just a number of groups who started to meet and say, where are we going? What do we need our trade association to be? And frankly, there was a lot of dissatisfaction with what was happening to move the fraternity movement forward. And when there's struggle and challenge, it brought people together in a way that I had never seen before.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about it and kind of just watch the process, honestly, the more I hear about it, I'm like, this sounds like the almost exact diagram of what we want a change process to look like, right? Like, hey, there was this sense of urgency and possibility that brought people to the table, and everybody really helped to craft that shared vision. You know, it's what we talk to our students all the time about, and I think, you know, the more we can share kind of what this process looked like with them, you know, the better they can be equipped to go and do a similar kind of a thing.
So every organization entered the conversation probably from a different point, mm-hmm. a different place. And for Delta Upsilon, when we left the NIC annual meeting last April, we left with more questions than answers. And actually, our board voted in a conference call shortly after that meeting to leave the NIC. But the preference among the board was to work with a group of like-minded organizations on a process or structure that would improve campus culture and campus community, and to be a partner with higher education. And so on one hand, that was the desire of the board, but on the other hand, if the NIC wasn't going to be able to provide that for us, they were committed to forging their own path. So following that meeting, the board voted, and the staff's work and direction was, one, create a plan for our departure from the NIC. What would that look like? How would we communicate? Who would we want to work with to form something? But then on the other hand, if there's a group of organizations within the NIC who will work to create change and create a structure that we think can really lead the movement, that would be our preference. And it just so happened that other executives were having similar conversations, and as we all got into the room together and started talking about a vision and how we would execute that vision, there were more similarities than there were differences. And so we were at an interesting point of, do we leave or do we stay? We want to be in to help create change from the inside, and ultimately, that's where we landed.
Yeah, it sounds like you were really, I mean, you knew what you wanted to accomplish, and I think your hope was to do it with the entire, you know, all of the partners with the NIC is, you know, what happened, but, you know, you guys were preparing also to, you know, move forward by yourselves or with another group because you were recognizing that it needed to happen.
Absolutely. And a couple of years ago, our board went through a process of, there's a book called Seven Measures for Success. And one of the measures is for your organization to decide who you want to partner with, but also, probably more importantly, who do you not want to partner with? And so we were at a point of saying, in this current format where the trade association was moving and some of the decisions that had been made and some of the things they were supporting, that was not who we wanted to be associated with. But we wanted to be in a trade association that was going to really be a partner to higher education, that was going to work to improve campus cultures and communities. And ultimately, that's where we landed. And so that's a great place to be for all of us.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And I just knocked everything over my desk. So knowing the new direction, right, Judd kind of shared the five different, priorities and things. What really excites you about kind of where we're going? I think that partnership with higher education, with universities, rather than, I think a lot of times from a campus perspective, we're just like, oh, man, the NIC again. I think in the past, they haven't been as helpful as we probably would like them to be. But it sounds like they're really going to be that partnership for us. But what, from the executive director perspective, right, you're, you know, leading a national organization, an international organization, what excites you?
Well, what's probably most exciting is if we sat back and really thought about it, if Delta Upsilon was as successful as it possibly could be, right? Let's just say that all 80 of our chapters were performing at their highest levels. They were the best chapters on their given campus, in their communities. The reality is there would be a ceiling on any given campus based on the campus culture of how good our chapters could be. And on some campuses, they may be what we would absolutely want from a chapter. On other campuses, because of the culture, even though they may be the best chapter on that campus, they may not be where we want them to be. And I think every organization has to wrestle with that, that the success of our chapters can be limited by the culture within that given community. And so what's most exciting for me is one of the focuses of this new NIC will be the campus ground game and how do we really impact campus culture. Because that is holding us back, that's presenting a lot of challenges, and so how do we as the collective pick a handful of select focus campuses and really dedicate our resources and work together to impact the culture on those campuses? And so for us, that's absolutely exciting, and this kind of hit me maybe a year and a half ago, this whole concept, because we were doing a reorganization at a university, and we were there for some hazing charges. And when our staff walked into the campus professional's office, there were two other headquarters there, and they were also investigating hazing claims that were all very similar in nature. And here you have three organizations that are large organizations, well-staffed, they had good volunteers, and we were all dealing with the same issues in that community. And so that would say that there was a culture there that permeated all the organizations, and we have to address that going forward. And probably the other thing I'm most excited about is I've known Judd for 9 or 10 years. He's a good friend. He's a colleague that I look to and say, he runs a really good organization, and he leads them in a way that we all can look at and take notes. And so having him at the helm of the NIC, I think, gives us the best chance to be successful. And there's nobody else that I would say, well, this could be better or that could be better. Judd's the guy. And I think he's going to recruit a really talented staff. He'll have more resources than the NIC has ever had to execute on our plan. And so I'm excited to see what the staff can do.
And, you know, you mentioned the ground game and dealing with campus culture, right? We've chatted about, You know, what good does it do to reorg a org a chapter or start a colony on a campus where 3 years later, you know, if the the HQ presence isn't there, they're just going to revert back to that status quo, right? Like Gentry talks about regression to the mean a lot in some of his blog posts. And, you know, if we can raise the mean through that campus ground game that, you know, the NIC is going to focus on, that really does help everyone. Judd talked a little bit about the campus ground game, and I'm still somewhat unclear what that looks like. What from your perspective, what do we mean when we say campus ground game?
Well, I think that will be developed and fleshed out as he builds his team. But just at a high level, when I think of it, on a number of campuses, we'll say large public campuses that have big fraternity sorority communities, there have been task forces to address the fraternity sorority community.
Right.
And we've had alumni who are involved in those task forces. They're creating recommendations. And in some cases, we at the headquarters never even knew there was a task force happening. The NIC never even knew there was a task force happening. And so we have our alumni, our chapter advisors, creating recommendations to solve problems without even asking for our input, asking for our best advice, our guidance. That's just not a good practice. And so the campus ground game, we would have a good understanding of what's happening in each community, each large community. We would know what are the high profile campus events that might be higher risk. Who are the alumni leaders? How can we influence those alumni leaders to really understand the direction of the NIC, to understand standards, to understand our policies? We just haven't had our finger on the pulse well enough. And I think the ground game will be there to work with IFCs, to work with local alumni, to work with our campus partners in a collaborative way. There's just not enough information going back and forth among everybody who needs to be at the table.
Yeah, and you know, it's creating those partnerships so that conversation is flowing all the different directions, right? Like if I were to, heck, my students here have no clue what the NIC is. And, you know, I think a lot of times campuses tend to just exist in isolation, right? Sure, the DU chapter at the University of Alabama, I think you guys have one there, knows that they're a part of a larger organization, but for them, all they see is we're here on this campus. And so bringing them the awareness of kind of the national perspective and that national, the priorities that our national organizations have and those standards that we hope all our member organizations uphold, you know, that's going to be super helpful as men run for IFC or as they decide on the direction of their community wherever they are. So I'm excited for that with you all.
Well, we have a lot of challenges. We have a lot of complex issues, and there just needs to be a shared understanding from our newest members to an executive director to our boards of what those issues are, what the challenges are, and what the best strategies are to address them. And whether that information comes from bottom up, top down, however it is, we as a community need to have better contact, better communication, and be working to address the issues instead of just, I don't think we've done a very good job at that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we aren't. Nobody knows everything that everybody else knows. And, you know, in this day and age, that knowledge really, truly is the power that we can use to move the communities forward. So I think that shared knowledge, shared partnership is going to be mighty in the coming couple of years.
Yeah, how do we get out of being so reactionary to everything and being more proactive in solving problems?
Yeah, we've got to know, right? Like, you know, I as a campus professional get to see it on a pretty consistent basis, but, you know, I'm not communicating that on a constant line of thought to the NIC or to the member organizations that are on my campus. you know, sometimes because I'm just so swamped here that I can't really think about the trends that are happening here. But, you know, if everybody kind of understands what's going on, we can intervene rather than having a campus shutdown or, you know, some of those high profile incidents that happened all last year.
Yeah, I think when we get to the place of a system-wide shutdown, we've all failed.
Yeah.
There's, on every level, there's so many warning signs and red flags that either we're ignoring, we're not seeing them, but when we get to that place, we're all failing. And so how can we be more proactive on the front end so that we never get to the place of needing a system-wide shutdown?
Yeah. Do you see, like, so you mentioned you had gone to that one campus to do a hazing investigation. There were two other larger organizations. Do you see with kind of this new shift, or maybe it already has been happening, where organizational, like executive directors or their, you know, directors of loss prevention or whatever they're called at the different headquarters staff, communicating more? So maybe there's a greater understanding of, hey, we're not the only ones coming to this campus, and there can be that greater partnership and understanding. Do you see some of that coming out of this too?
I do. There has been a greater level of collaboration and partnership and just agreement that we all need to be working together to solve these problems. And that means we need to commit more resources. We need to commit more staff time. We need to communicate. We need to meet in person more. And so all of that is going to be helpful in getting us on the same page. And you know, when you sit down and you can have a face-to-face conversation and look somebody in the eye, it's so much better than just seeing them once or twice a year.
Right.
And so that will be something that the NIC and its governing council will be committed to doing, is how can we spend more time together, especially the executive directors, because we're all dealing with many of the same campus issues and the same problems. How can we share that information more regularly?
Yeah. I mean, isn't, like, one of the tenets when you guys were having the conversations for NIC 2.0 was, you know, being open and honest and transparent with each other. And I think that's probably continuing, is what I'm hearing from you.
Yes, absolutely. And we want to be transparent. We want to be brutally honest with each other, but do it in a humble way. And, you know, being brutally honest means if somebody is not doing what they need to do, be willing to engage in a conversation and say, I don't understand why you did that. I think it's affecting the rest of the community. How can we do that better? And I think so often we've fallen into this. I think generally with fraternities, we've adopted this mindset where sometimes it's not okay to question each other. It's not okay to challenge each other when I think that's what we expect our students to do. If you see something right in the community that isn't either living up to the values, it's not showing leadership, you disagree with the decision, it's okay to challenge it in a respectful way. And we may not all agree, that's okay, but I would hope that if we were making decisions at the leadership level within Delta Upsilon and they were impacting the community in some way, that people would call us out on it. And that would then calls us to pause and reflect and say, did we make the same decision again? Did we make the right decision? And if we think we did, that's fine, right? But how can we be better at calling out decisions that we may disagree with? And that's what's happened in this NIC 2.0 process from day one.
And that's really, I mean, you're right. That's exactly what we preach to our students, right? Call each other out, be transparent, be open about the things that are facing your chapters, because, I mean, honestly, you guys, we're all facing similar things, and if we can work together, especially if they're on the same campus, right, you know, if we can work together to address those, you know, like Gentry McCreary's, what if everybody went into one campus and, like, did that giant fix, you know, how that might change things. I'm curious, you know, there's a lot of new moving parts in the NIC, and you know, how does this new direction and some of the new priorities affect operations of an international fraternity, right? What's going to be different for you and for your staff with this new way of looking at the fraternal world?
Well, there's a couple things that were already in conversations with the board and building some strategies around, that we have all wanted a stronger and more robust NIC for years, but frankly, what we were paying for dues, you could never have what we wanted, right? And so we all had these big dreams, but we weren't paying for what we were dreaming and wanting. And as we were creating this vision for the NIC 2.0, it became very clear to do this, we all had to pay more. And so for each organization, that meant 3.5 times more in dues. And that's going to require all of us to make some tough choices in how we reallocate that money. And for Delta Upsilon, we decided that it was important to be on the governing council, and so we're going to pay a little more than 3.5 times because we wanted to be in that leadership circle that was shaping the direction over the next couple of years. And so just from a pure financial side, paying 3.5 more times in dues requires us to make some tough decisions. Also, we need to be willing to spend staff and volunteer resources to assist when the NIC needs assistance. And I was actually thinking about this morning, that since September, I've probably spent between 15 to 20 days working on NIC or other interfraternal related items. So that's 2 to 3 weeks that Delta Upsilon doesn't have me focused on DU specific things, right? So that's going to affect the organization in some way, but it also benefits the organization because we're contributing to the broader community. And so it's going to be really about resources. Each organization is going to be affected, whether it's financial or time of volunteers and staff, because we all have to be committed to this project to see it to be successful.
Yeah, and Judd had mentioned kind of that, the dues increase and dues shift, and probably for some of our smaller groups, right, that might be a little bit more difficult. But I know, you know, we've talked about that it's not just a, you know, you have to pay us more, but also, you know, some of that can come from participation in NIC programming and providing scholarships for their members. So, you know, some of those, like, additional dues increases can be factored into different ways. So that helps with just the average, you know, for any fraternity to afford kind of that increase in things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What do you think are some issues or concerns you might have? I know that it's brand new, and, you know, I'm totally trusting in Judd's leadership and in the, you know, the people that NIC is going to bring on board and all the executive directors to really make this thing happen in the next 2 to 5 years, right? Like, I'm patient. Who cares? We have some time, especially if we have a plan moving forward. But what kind of issues do you see potentially happening?
Well, I think there's two of them that I can think of immediately. The first one would be, because this is a new vision, a whole new plan, new focus issues, new senior leadership on the staff, the NIC is really a startup.
Yeah.
And if you think about any time you've had a transition in one of your offices and you've had new teammates join the team, new coworkers, there is absolutely a learning curve, transition time. Even if they've done the job somewhere else, it takes time to learn it inside your office or inside the community or culture. So it's exciting. There's a vision. Everybody's going to want to see results, but we have to be patient. It's not going to happen overnight. To build an entire team, to educate the team on the priorities, build the culture, start implementing some of the changes, that's going to take a year, 2 years, 3 years. Right. And I think we all understand that, but we just have to be patient about it. But the other thing is, we may disagree with some of the decisions that the NIC leadership or the staff makes. And they may be doing it different than I would have done it. But the reality is, that's not necessarily a bad thing if we get to the same end goal. Right? And so if I think about our office here, over the last 5 to 7 years, I've had to delegate a lot more things to other staff. And the staff may not do it exactly how I would have done it. And so it's this learning of, well, that's okay. Yes, why they did it that way. And if it's still successful, how you get to the end point doesn't matter. Now, if you fundamentally disagree with the decision or the direction and you think it's going to cause harm or be damaging, well, then that's a time to really challenge and question it and do it in a respectful way. But just because you disagree with how something is done doesn't mean that we need a lot of folks out there questioning and complaining because they would have done it different, right? We've hired a new team, we've put our faith and our trust in them, and we just need to let them do the job. And all of us need to support the efforts that they're going to make.
Yeah, one of the, you know, as you're talking about that and talking about just trusting the direction of kind of the NIC and the governing council, one thing that popped back into my mind was when you were talking about, you know, organizations being willing to commit a little bit more to serve on that governing council. And I think, you know, at the higher exec levels, you know, you certainly understand how the NIC functions and works, but help me understand kind of what the governing council is, what it does. I think that's the right term for it. I think you mentioned that, but you know, what is it and what's its role within the NIC?
Well, the governing council, it's similar to a board, but it's not a board. It's going to be larger than a typical board, and our first meeting is February 18th. And so as we've entered this new way of governing, I think we will spend some time deciding how is this governing council going to work? What are we going to be focused on? I know we're going to be focused on accountability, and so one of the big criticisms of the NIC, I think over the last 10 years that I've heard, would be you have these standards. Some would say they're really not even a high-level standard, but they were a start. But what's the accountability for organizations? And
right.
Governing Council needs to figure out how are we going to hold organizations and chapters accountable that we're meeting the standards. We've all committed to being more transparent. And so what does transparency look like? What information are we publicly sharing? And so the council is going to be the board, is going to help with the vision, and do what we need to do to support the staff in the execution.
Okay, so it's more of that, like, board of directors role rather than, you know, when we use the word governing council, I think, oh, governing council, but less about, ruling, but more kind of providing that advice and counsel and direction like a typical board of directors would do.
Yes, we're not going to be involved in the tactics or the operations. Our role is not to tell Judd what to do or to tell the NIC staff what to do. It's to be thinking about what are the issues and trends within higher education that are affecting fraternities and how are we as a trade association going to address them.
Awesome. No, I think that's really helpful. I'm not sure if there's other things I'm forgetting to ask about, but I think, you know, getting that perspective from you and kind of seeing more of that inner working and what it's going to do for National Fraternity is super helpful. So is there anything else I need to ask or know about?
Well, the only other thing I would add is so often when we approach challenge situations, everybody wants to protect what I would call their turf. Right, and so whether that's us at the headquarters, it's our volunteers, the students, the campus professionals, I'll hear, well, they're my students, or it's my council.
Mm-hmm.
Reality is, it's all of our students, it's all of our councils, and we as a collective need to be committed to working together, seeing this through the end, because I think this will be, at least in my time, our one big effort. And I don't know if there will ever be another time, as long as I'm involved in fraternity and sorority, where we have a greater chance of impacting change, cultural change, organizational change. This is it. And so, at least for me, I'm just going to throw all my support in, do what I can to be a partner and a player and supporter, and because this is it. And our community needs this more than ever. And so it's one of those times, you don't get many of those, where all the stars are aligning.
Yeah.
And so how can all of us work together to really make the change that is needed?
Yeah, I think, you know, last year was really kind of that perfect storm to get everybody to the table, and it just really, it is kind of incredible how much cooperation happened. And even, you know, I think from the campus side, like, we felt kind of like we were being kept in the dark, but you know, honestly, you guys were taking care of business, and we needed to trust what was going on behind the scenes. And what emerged is really something I'm super excited to see what's going to happen in the next couple of years, for sure.
I think if people have questions along the way, now that our five focus areas are out there, we're building the plan, I know Judd or anybody else in the governing council is happy to sit down and talk about what we're doing, why we're doing it, willing to take suggestions. As long as they're constructive criticisms, those are always good things.
Yeah. Now, is that governing council a public thing?
I believe it will be. There are a couple appointments that still need to be made, and three of the positions are appointed. Those appointments haven't been made yet, and so once they are, I believe that will be made public as to who is on the council.
Okay, so kind of a mixture of executive directors and, you know, some other folks who have probably been in the fraternal movement or, you know, are sharp people that we really want on our side and we want their voices at the table.
Yeah, there'll be representatives of one of the member organizations. The council will be primarily executive directors, but there will be also some volunteers, whether they be lead volunteers in organization, meaning national presidents, past presidents. It'll be some mixture of the two.
Okay. Very cool. Well, Justin, that was great. That's, you know, all the stuff I was really curious about.
Okay.
One day later, I spoke with Gordy Heminger, CEO of Alpha Sigma Phi Fraternity. Here's that conversation.
Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great, Gordy. How are you?
I am doing well, thanks.
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much for taking the time for me.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy to help out. I was excited when Liz forwarded me the note.
Well, you ready to dive right in?
I am. Let's do it.
Awesome. I've got us recording a little bit, so picking your voice up nice and clear, so that's good. You know, I talked with Judd about what NIC 2.0 looks like, but from a executive director perspective, what was the process like in crafting this new plan and this new way of looking at fraternity for the next who knows how long?
Well, it was an incredibly collaborative and open process. And honestly, I would say the collaboration among the various fraternities was as strong as I've seen in the 7 years that I've been the CEO for Alpha Sigma Phi, in the fact that there were subgroups, large groups where everybody reported back out on what was happening, open house-type meetings where people could hear what was going on, even if you weren't part of that committee. I think Judd did a tremendous job of reaching out individually to the execs, offering to go to board meetings, collaborating with some of our partners in student affairs. I thought it was just a tremendous process and really a model for how change can be implemented, and you can bring along stakeholders, and you can have people feel really a part of this new NIC 2.0, as it's being called. So I think it's a great process, but it was very, very collaborative in nature, and I think it's one of those processes where the outcome might not be 100% that anybody wants, but I think it's something that's very good that people are genuinely excited about, and it gets us a lot closer to what, you know, the ultimate goal is of having a strong fraternity community across North America. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Do you think that timing kind of played a role in helping this to be such a collaborative effort? Because I feel like, I guess in the back of my mind, I have this picture of 70 fraternity executives trying to hash something out, and it makes me think of like the Senate, perhaps. But, you know, from everything that I've heard from you and everybody else I've talked to, is just the collaboration was at an all-time high. Is it just because of the timing?
Well, I would say that we functioned like it would be nice if the United States government functioned. So we worked truly very well together. We compromised, we collaborated, we listened, which I think was, you know, incredibly important, because I think all the execs and all the fraternities have different things that are really important to them and really important to their boards and really important to their membership. And so I think everybody did a great job of listening and compromising and coming up with something that could work for everyone and that it was a giant step forward in terms of, you know, in terms of progress. And I think, sure, timing, I think, really might have been, well, not might have been, I think was an important, you know, part of it. I think we all can recognize that, you know, 2014, the 2014-15 academic year was not the most successful academic year in the history of fraternities.
Right.
And that there were, you know, a lot of incidents that generated a lot of attention that were not positive. So I think that certainly got us closer to a tipping point where we all recognize that something different has to be done, and quite frankly, something dramatically different has to be done. It's no longer enough just to rearrange the chairs on the deck of a Titanic. You know, we need to completely relook at how we're doing things. And so I think that definitely helped, and then with the change of leadership in the NIC and you know, Pete deciding to do something else, I think presented a real opportunity that, you know, there will be a new executive. All these issues are happening, so let's get together. Now is an opportunity to really try to implement some change, and so I think timing was important.
Very good. And, you know, Judd went over the, you know, the five different principles, tenets of kind of NIC 2.0, but you're talking about moving forward and all these cool changes and things. What excites you most about this new direction?
Well, I think the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth thing that excites me is the ground game. you know, and hands down, you know, I've thought since, you know, I've been CEO, and I thought when I was a campus-based professional at Bowling Green that the NIC needed to be more involved and more engaged with the local IFCs, and needed to be better partners with the campus fraternity and sorority life professional, and needed to be more engaged with the leadership of the IFCs. And I've always thought that if we're really going to change culture, if we're really going to do some great things, it can't be a top-down approach, but it's got to be a bottom-up approach. And so I think the best way to do that is that you start at the local level. So the fact that we are now getting serious about engaging at the local level with the IFCs in terms of providing better resources and better support and better guidance and being better partners with the campus professionals, that to me is long overdue. So that I'm very excited about that, and really that was the most important thing to me and to Alpha Sigma Phi in this entire process. And if the outcome would have been that it was going to be status quo with a ground game, status quo with partnerships with the IFCs, and I'm not sure, honestly, the NIC 2.0 would have been something that would have really resonated with Alpha Sigma Phi, and I think there are a lot of other fraternities that would have felt the same way. But I do believe the ground game is the key to all of this. I think the other parts, I think, are nice, and I think will provide value and will make things better, but the ground game is the key to it all, at least in my opinion.
When you talk about ground game, you know, because I love that phrase, and it makes me think, hey, we're not just going to be this mystical voice in Indy that sends out an email every so often with the NIC. Help me understand and help, you know, the listeners understand kind of what that specifically means, that ground game piece, because I think we've been talking about it a lot as campus-based professionals, certainly going, well, what does this mean for us?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what Judd has done a very nice job of laying out that we're going to do it systematically and in a sustainable manner where we're going to identify campuses where we can provide better support and have a better partnership with, and we're going to start off with 2-3 campuses in the first year, then increase to 10 and 20 and so forth. So it's in a sustainable, you know, model. We're not going to come in and say we want to provide a ground game on 150 campuses in year one. That's not realistic.
Right, you can't fix them all at one time.
That's exactly right. So Judd's outlined a plan that's sustainable, that will make an impact, and that we will grow accordingly. But the general premise is that, you know, there will be NIC staff who will be working in collaboration and partnership with the campus-based staff and the alumni to provide greater support to the member organizations, the chapters, and the IFC on that campus. And so there will absolutely be a key component to it will be engaging and leveraging local alums to ensure that we have advisory boards to ensure that there might be an alumni IFC, for example, if that would fit the culture and the mission of the campus. So I think these are all opportunities that with dedicated staff resources. But the most important thing to me, and Judge's done such a great job of reinforcing this, and I've appreciated it as a former campus-based professional, is that this has to be done in collaboration and partnership with the university and college staff on the ground. And so that, to me, I think maximizes the likelihood of this being successful versus, you know, we're in our silo and the campus-based professionals in their silo, that we need to be in lockstep with the campus-based professional to maximize the resources that are being provided. So I view this as a tremendous win for everyone, and, you know, we'll see the impact that it makes in short orders. We're going to be doing this with a couple campuses in year one, so we'll be able to see the impact. But I think it's going to be a very positive positive development.
And I've loved, you know, hearing about that partnership and the collaboration with the host institution. I think, you know, our students and even, you know, our fraternity movement gets kind of the input from a couple different places, right? They get it from the NIC, they get it from the headquarters, and they get it from the institution, as well as their peers. And so, you know, if we're working with all of those to set up the premier development opportunity for men on a college campus, which I think you and I both agree and hope that fraternities can and should be, you know, that partnership means that, you know, one of my friends likens it to Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill, right? We're all pushing in the same point instead of people pushing from, like, different sides.
No, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, there's so many analogies to be made, but I believe that a chapter and a community is going to have the greatest likelihood of impact and success, you know, if the local alums, the campus, and the headquarters are all, you know, singing from the same sheet of music.
Oh, yeah.
And the NIC can be a good reinforcer and can be a good complement to that. And you know, I think we've tried it one way for quite some time, and it really hasn't had the impact that we all would hope. And so I think that it's great that, you know, Judd and others are willing to try a different approach. And I believe it'll be a better approach, but I'm also very confident in Judd's leadership that if we're not seeing the measurable results we're hoping for, that there will be adaptations to achieve what we all want.
Yeah, we're not locked into here's what this is. I like kind of the fluidness. Let's keep on. We know what we're trying to accomplish, but we may have to change some of the methods that we use to go about accomplishing those things.
Absolutely. I envision it being very dynamic.
Yeah. We talked a lot about kind of the campus and how it might affect, you know, me and my colleagues as campus professionals, but what does this look like from, like, for an international or national fraternity perspective? How does this shift kind of your operations, how you guys do things, how you guys work?
Well, there's going to be greater accountability on all of us. You know, there's updated and enhanced standards, which I think are going to be important, and I think there's going to be a greater expectation that the member organizations comply with the standards and meet and or exceed the standards. I think, you know, as Judge described it, that we're going to have a race to the top versus a gravitation towards the bottom. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's going to be some element of pressure on member organizations to do better and to be able to document how they're doing better and to be able to document the assessment in terms of the impact, you know, that they're making. And that, you know, I know at Alpha Sigma Phi that, you know, we better be able to demonstrate value, we better be able to demonstrate services, and that they better be comparable and or greater than what the industry norm is, or Alpha Sigma Phi is going to have a greater challenge getting permission to expand on a campus, and our overall recruitment numbers will hurt because the undergraduate men will be able to shop around and will go with the best value, not necessarily the least expensive organization, but the best value. So I think that's all positive, and I think Alpha Sigma Phi is doing a lot of great things, but it's going to force us to be even better and to constantly evolve and not get complacent. So I think that, in short, I think it's going to challenge all of us as member organizations. And I think that it should provide a greater level of confidence and reassurance to our campus partners that if you're a member of the NIC, you're meeting these standards and you're expected to be better. And so I think, you know, if I'm a campus-based partner, that is reassuring to me, knowing that there is some element of challenge and oversight by the NIC of the member organizations.
Yeah, because kind of in the past, I feel like we had those standards and we talked about those standards, but, you know, I'm not sure that anything really came of standards that were put forth by the NIC other than just, hey, here are our standards. But what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, member organizations will call each other out on things, or NIC staff will kind of help to call out member organizations to help them live up to the things that you all have agreed on.
No, that's correct. I mean, I think that the NIC will be staffed in such a way that some of the data points the NIC will be able to now secure, where they might not have had the staff before to work with all the campuses to get the grade reports and to have a mechanism for tracking service hours and dollars raised, you know, for charity or things of that nature. The NIC will have the staffing mechanism to do that. So the first thing, obviously, is if you're going to hold people accountable, you need to have the data to do it.
Right.
The NIC will now have the data to do it. The second thing is, do we have the willingness to do it? And I believe that we do, and that was one of the conversations with, you know, all of the execs, and there is a willingness on our part to respectfully hold each other accountable, challenge and challenge us, and I think that's a positive thing, and I think we will all be better as a result.
And I think, you know, we're basically modeling what we hope our undergraduates would do too, right? Set their own standards on the collegiate level, hold one another accountable to those standards, and challenge and push each other to be better. So, you know, when you mentioned that this is a perfect model of kind of how a change initiative should go, that's what I keep on reflecting on, is just how incredible it was that, you know, we had some things that made us think differently about how fraternity is structured and run on the, you know, international level. And, you know, then we actually came together and collaborated and put forward a new way of looking at things. And so, you know, I think for campus-based professionals working with their IFCs and with other councils, you know, it's a perfect case study of here's how to, you know, really start this moving forward.
Well, it is, and when you really think about it, just like on a campus, you know, you've got the membership of, you know, the IFC is varied. You've got smaller chapters, you've got larger chapters, and so is the NIC. And the fact that we were able to come up with something that, you know, our largest organizations and some of our smaller organizations were able to buy into, I think is a real testament to Judd and the process that he utilized to you know, get that change.
Right. Well, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of some of those really amazing things that are going to come out of this. Do you see any potential issues in the next couple of years as, you know, we start implementing NIC 2.0 and, you know, begin that campus ground game and setting up all the, you know, the five priorities for the NIC? Do you see any kind of issues popping up?
Well, I think the biggest issue is what is going to happen with fraternities that are not part of the NIC.
Right.
And I think that is the real issue, because the fraternities that are part of the NIC are investing significant resources, because, you know, as you probably know, one of the parts of this is that, you know, the fees for member organizations were raised 350%.
Right.
So that's a sizable increase. It's a sizable percentage of our budget and a sizable line item. So we're investing, along with the other fraternities, a considerable amount of money to build a ground game and to build an NIC that everyone can be proud of, the members, the undergraduates, the alums, the headquarters, the campus-based professionals. Everybody can be proud of, and that's a real resource and advocate for the fraternal movement. So we're investing a lot of money in that. We're developing standards so the campuses and the alums can be reassured that fraternities are going to do what we say we're going to do. So having said all that, I think the real conundrum will be what role do those fraternities who choose not to invest and who choose not to have the oversight structure of the NIC, what role will they play, you know, on a campus? And I think that will be over time, not in year one or year two, but I can see that being a real challenge at a certain point.
Yeah. Now, you know, I'm assuming though that even though they're not part of the NIC, right, that fraternities are still communicating with those folks who are, we'll call them, on the outside, right? It's not like you're just not talking with them. They just haven't chosen to be a part of this new shift and structure.
Right. No, I
so relationships still exist.
Right. You know, Judd and others are talking with and communicating with those who at this point have elected not to be part of the NIC. And, you know, certainly I think that the goal of everyone is that we want every eligible fraternity to be part of the NIC. We want every eligible fraternity to invest in the future of the fraternal movement. We want every eligible fraternity to agree to a set of shared standards. And we think that that will make a stronger overall fraternity community. What we don't want is we've got X amount of organizations over here, then we've got Y amount of organizations over here. And I believe, and I think others believe, that that will diminish the likelihood of our ability to have success and to make a real lasting impact. And I think it will have a real impact in terms of the local ground game, actually. So, you know, our goal is let's try to bring everybody back in the tent. We should all have the same goal. I think if we can accomplish that, bring everybody back in the tent, then I think we've maximized the likelihood of success. So I think, you know, to me, I think we've got a great, I think Judd is going to be a great executive. He's hiring some talented staff. The collaboration and spirit, you know, and teamwork among the execs right now has not been this high since I've been around, and I've heard people who have been around longer say the exact same thing. So we've got a lot of positive things moving in the right direction. And so I think, you know, you ask, you know, what could be, you know, the roadblock or whatnot. I think this would be is the biggest potential risk associated, you know, with it.
Right. But, you know, I think I'm with you that, you know, Judd and the people on the NIC staff will certainly work with those organizations, and perhaps we can bring, you know, everybody back under that tent. So that's really, you know, I think that's really, it's good to note, but also another good opportunity to see kind of the collaboration continue to grow across the field.
No, absolutely. I mean, to me, it would be no different than if a chapter decided that they didn't want to pay the IFC dues anymore, and so they wanted to secede, you know, from the IFC. You know, the IFC would clearly continue to work with that group to bring them back into the fold. The campus partner would work with that group to bring them back in the fold, and I think that's what we all have to do with the groups at this point who have elected not to, you know, invest in NIC 2.0 is, you know, let's work, let's extend a hand, let's bring them back in the fold, because we are all going to be better and stronger and healthier if we're all, you know, working together. And so that's my hope. I think that's the one potential risk associated, you know, on the horizon. But I'm very optimistic about, you know, what NIC 2.0 can do. Even if it does half of what I think it can do, it's still going to be light years ahead of where we're at right now, and it's still going to be a positive change. So I could not be more excited and upbeat about what I think the future for fraternities, you know, will be, you know, in the coming years.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I share your excitement every time I have a conversation like this with you or Judd or other folks. I just keep thinking about how great it's going to be for our campuses and for all of our partners. And I think, you know, the last question I'm curious about is there a wide variety of people that listen to this podcast. You know, I've got some students, parents, certainly campus professionals and headquarters staff. What would you say, how can we help to further the work of NIC 2.0? I mean, obviously we're not in the office of the NIC, but, you know, we're certainly partners. How can we help be the best partners we can be?
Well, I think you hit the key. You know, we're all partners. We all want the same thing. We all want every undergraduate man to have a transformational, positive fraternity experience where they leave a better man than when they came, and they have the skills to be successful in whatever the next phase of their life. That's what we all want. So, you know, we all talk about partnership, and partnership's a good you know, buzzword, but I think this is a real opportunity where we can all demonstrate, you know, a partnership and how we can work together to really advance the fraternal movement and achieve, you know, our mutual and shared goals. And I think if we do that, and that would be the undergraduates on the IFCs, the undergraduates, the chapters, the headquarters, the alums, the campus-based partners, parents, everybody, if we're all working together, if we all are working towards that shared purpose, I think it's going to be an exciting, you know, next 5, 6, 7 years and beyond. And you know, I think the model that we used to get to this point from the NIC was great because we all compromised, we collaborated. And I think if we all do that, continue to compromise, collaborate, I think it's going to be great.
Awesome. Well, Gordy, I want to thank you for your time. I'm going to hit stop on the recording, but certainly appreciate getting kind of those perspectives from you. Well, that's it for our bonus episode. Hope you enjoyed hearing those voices from two different executive directors. As always, subscribe on iTunes, leave a comment there or on the blog, and feel free to share this widely. We'll be back next week with some student interviews from the AFLV Central Leadership Conference. Until then, stay curious.